Some 15%, now I know it's a tiny number, some 15% of U.S. voters now see global warming as their main concern, meaning it could be an important issue in next year's election, says analyst. Now, the reason this matters is that the percentage of Americans who believe the Earth has been warming rose to 83% from 75% last year, 75% last year, 83% this year in a poll that was just now conducted. So this means, what that basically means, I think, Albert, is the more that the Michelle Bachmans and the Rick Perrys talk about their faith-based climate, and the more that Rick Perry prays for rain and his plant and his state instead burns up in response, that there are, I mean, 83% of Americans believe the Earth has been warming.
Yeah.
When was the last time, but last year, Albert, it was 75%. When was the last time, you know, not Radio Rwanda, screw them.
Yeah.
But when was the last time that MSNBC or any of the others told you 75% of the people in the United States believe the planet is warming? Sorry, not yelling at you.
No, I don't know. I don't know, yelling at you.
But, I mean, that's kind of important, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a whole lot more people that than believe that they were picked up outside Pascagoula, Mississippi by aliens and anal probed.
Slightly.
Which is the same number as the number of teabaggers in America.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. They're so vocal, they think they're a majority.
Yeah, right, because, you know, my little raising of my voice notwithstanding. Screaming is not content.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I mean. It's like, shut up. We see more of them than they see of them. I mean, no wonder they don't see any other point of view. All they get to see is themselves. All we get to see, basically, is themselves. That's all we get to see is them. That's all you ever hear. They're the only ones that make any friggin' news. When their news is laughed at, I mean, I'm not trying to, none of that shit flies with me. I mean, I try to be open. But all right, what are they going to say? Oh, Jesus. Oh, again, they got me with the, you know, the horrible picture. Every time. It never stops, and it's worse and worse and worse every day. Every day, these people just are crazier and crazier. So who the hell's listening to them? And why are you covering them so much? That's my biggest thing. You guys should say these people are stupid, because they are. There's no ifs, ands, or buts around it. They're stupid. It's quantifiable. They're freaking retarded. And I hate to say, I know, we're not supposed to say retarded. They're retarded. That's retarded. You're not someone born like that. Those people. That. They should know better. But no. No. We're going to listen to them. I don't understand it. I don't comprehend it other than the fact that the people who want them, we sure all comprehend it. The people with money, that's the point of view they want to push out, and that's what we get. You know, these people, you know, like you were talking about current TV. God, I'd love to see you on current TV, and boy, they could really use you, Bob. They need content. You know, I love a documentary. Don't get me wrong. I watch documentaries nonstop, but I can only watch the same one so many times.
Can you imagine 3 hours of these conversations going out over something like that? I mean, you just sort of, well, you know, you're like Bill Hicks, just, you know, just sowing seeds. No, I mean, yeah, that would be amazing.
Like a C-SPAN that people call in, like a C-SPAN that people, yeah, that would be beautiful. You know, that would be a beautiful thing.
And get it out of the studio and be, you know, walking around, the pointing at the sky and, you know, not all, you know, just break, you know, just take a sledgehammer and shatter the fourth wall.
Because, yeah, I mean, well, that's, yeah, the fourth branch, huh? The media. And you're right, when are they going to take these people to task? When?
Let me throw a little cold water along your, those statistics we were talking about a minute ago, Albert? This is telling, okay? I mean, this is really important because, you know, it's 83%, right? Believe that the planet is warming. Well, that's not the end of the statistics, though. You know, there's lies, damned lies, and statistics, I guess they say. 71% of that 83% 71% of the Americans who believe warming is happening think that it's caused either partly or mostly by humans. Huh? Really? 71%? And then how did these clowns get into office, in these teabagging goober? How did... Because, you know why?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because we stay home, that's why.
Because we stay home. I got it, and I got one that... But wait, there's more. It's another one of those damn Ginsu commercials, Albert. The other fun part is that the people who don't believe in global warming, the so-called skeptics, the non-believers, the deniers... I don't like non-believers. The deniers, the people who think that science doesn't work in their world, that, you know, well, you know, we have to boil our water to 472 degrees Fahrenheit to get it to go. Our water freezes at 12. Those people, on the other hand, you know, the Jesus will cool our planet with his loving cooling rays. Those people, they're entrenching, Albert. They're entrenching. Because they went from being 35% to 53% in 2011. I mean, they're digging in. Now, what you just said a minute ago, because we don't vote, one of my favorite writers over at Crooks and Liars is Caroli. She's just amazing. She and Susie Madrack, you know, they're Beatles to me. They're Elvis. Well, she's got a post from yesterday. Headline: Democracy in Action. 13% of Hollywood, Florida voters strip union workers of negotiated pensions and health plans. Okay, this is the pull quote that Caroli grabbed from the Miami Herald. With a low voter turnout, about 13% of the city's 84,521 registered voters. So that's 8,452 plus... Okay, so about, 13,000 voters. Oh, I'm getting a pronunciation correction. I'm supposed to call Caroli Caroli. Says it rhymes with merrily, or so she told... okay. Caroli. Merrily. Caroli. Okay. Thank you, Betsy. Betsy's looks out for my pronunciation well-being. Caroli. I like that better, really. But no, 13,000 people voted, and the majority said that public servants can't have negotiated pensions and health plans. So that's 13% voted. So 13% divided by 2 is 6.5%. So roughly, and I don't know, maybe it was more, but no less than 6.51% of the eligible voters in Hollywood, Florida, put the screws to firefighters, police, and other city employees.
Mm-hmm.
Where were the people who like to have their fires put out, Albert? Where were the people who like for the police to keep the muggings from happening?
Well, Brother Bob, they may have very well been, like a lot of people in the state of Wisconsin have been when they had their new Voter ID Act enabled or enacted. In that, but it said maybe everybody who wanted to vote needed a state-issued voter ID. And then they'd say how much it cost. But what they failed to mention is that you could go to the DMV and ask for the free ID, and they'd have to give it to you. But in all ways, they were instructed to never mention the free ID until the person asked for it. But they never put that information out to say that people had to ask for the free ID. So, you know, who knows, you know. They never really advertised vote, you know, voting day. When do you see it advertised? I mean, I'm even here. You see where I live. Every once in a while, you know, oh, that's right. You know, now I happen to not miss it because I pay attention too much, but I can see how it's easy for people to miss. It's too easy for them to miss. I'd love to see, you know, I don't give a shit. I'd love to see mandatory voting. Mandatory.
I think you've invented another bumper sticker. Voting Or, I vote because I pay attention too much. Or, I'm no teabagger because I pay attention too much.
Yeah. Shit, you only got to pay attention a little bit not to be one of them idiots. But, you know, but for real, like, I'd love to see, I mean, this is the information age, you know, and the nice thing is, you know, there is hope. You know me, I got hope for the future. I do. I really do think that we're going to start to hit the nails on the head and, you know, maybe dust off some old books that people have forgotten and, you know, start to kind of really get some innovations going that we really desperately need. You know, I mean, and, you know, honestly, it doesn't really help what happened with that Solaris shit. That pisses me off. I don't understand, you know, what that's all about. I mean, for me, you know, the Republicans, they love to, no matter what, you know, Enron comes along, they soften their gloves with them. Not me. I'd like to beat the hell of these guys for where they run some scam with their thin film or whatever the hell else like that. Because it's like running an orphanage and then a butcher shop out the back where you sell the little kids that you take in. When you take a solar company like that and then destroy it. And then it puts a black eye on the entire, I mean, we don't need any more black eyes. We've just been through 30 years since Reagan when he tore the panels off the roof. And that was just for hot water heaters. People to this very day think, oh, the technology's not here yet. Oh, no, we can't do it. So anytime it gets a black eye like that, my God, you know who comes out in me? That just is outrageous to me. So that really pisses me off. I hope people can start, you know, look past that and understand how important this issue is, that of us becoming energy, you know, energy independent, individually, to have energy liberty. You know, that's what we need in this country. That's the kinds of things. You know, our economy, shmonomy. You know, screw the economy. What the hell is that? That's not going to, just like with the trees, this shit ain't going to mean anything if we ain't here. And if we keep, you know, pulling off the tar sands and blowing up the mountains and, you know, spending, you know, I love to see this shit too. This is another one that just drives me nuts. How much did we spend in Iraq and Afghanistan? Because I'm pretty sure it's in the $3 trillion range.
Thereabouts.
Every time I see the, you know, like the New York Times and they show, I mean, honestly, at least they're showing the graphs of which president's more responsible for the spending than the other one, right? You see Bush, you know, and they put in, his is massively huger than Obama's. Obama's is little tiny slits. You know, and plus there's some income coming in on the top. But they always put Bush's, the war is like $1.5 trillion. That's a bargain. I thought we hit $1.5 trillion when he was still, you know, right in the beginning of his first term. I mean, what are you talking about, $1.5 trillion? Well, that's $3 trillion. Last time I heard, now they're going to build more to the embassy, which is already the largest building in the frickin' planet, or largest embassy in the world. They're going to make it so we can fit double the troops there. You know, so, you know, we're never getting that.
But you know what? Whoever winds up getting that embassy is going to get a fine embassy once we finally get run out.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe the Chinese.
Nomads. Well, you know, the nomads. You know, the last scragglers of human civilization wandering the desert planet. You know, finding cans of dog food and rejoicing and throwing a celebration. That's what it's going to be. Eating sand scorpions and everything else. Yeah, those places will be worthless other than some shelter and then sandstorms. You know, and then those people will die and then humans will pass from this universe and maybe it can go on. I don't know. But, you know, if we don't get our ass in gear, you know, I mean, I want to see Obama mad. That's what I want. I paid to see that. We just lived through 8 years of Bush. I want you to go in there and kick ass.
Yeah.
Not lay on your back and spread eagle and grab your ankles. That's not what I want to know. That's not what we paid for. We don't have time for that. Maybe after, but not now. Right now, you have to kick ass hard and again and again and again and again and again and again. Yeah, who's Daly? Who's that guy? I don't know who that guy is. Get him out of there. Fire. Get rid of these people. Angry black men. We need an angry somebody. We just need somebody with some backbone. And what is this jobs bill? I'm not impressed with it. I don't give a shit. I'm not impressed. It's not. It's half-assed. It's a, oh, we'll just do this. Oh, put some more roads up. Well, we're going into winter now. So what the hell roads? What jobs? We don't need this kind of crap. this little mealy, you know, it's time to go to war. Oh, everybody's sending, you know, top-end cruise missiles and spaceship deployment teams and everything else they've frickin' developed for trillions of dollars. Oh, it's Jobs. Oh, well, here's $100 million, you know, have fun. It's like, what are we doing, making deer trails? I got a nice bike trail to Viroqua over here, big deal.
Oh, wait a minute. Well, you mentioned bike trails. You do know that a Republican had a hissy over them the other day, right?
Oh, of course they do. Of course they always do. Oh, it's land I could use to grow some corn.
It's a threat to national security. Or, I don't know, security.
They're little fear minds. They, you know, they're always afraid. They're afraid of everything except of what they should be afraid of. You know, they're afraid of everything. Oh, the liberals, socialism. You know, it's like, how stupid do you have to be to not be able to look at the most successful species on this planet and say, wow, those guys work together. Not only do they work together, they'll work with species outside their own species. Look at that. I mean, look at how much we could learn from just a little simple ant. You know, or the bee. You know, now I'm not saying that people should be drones and it should be 1984 dystopia and people should work for the party or anything bullshit like that. You know better than that. I'm saying we need to work with the system that we live in.
No, or perhaps work with an understanding that if you kill off a lot of the hive, you kill off some of the hive, you may very well kill off the whole hive. I mean, look at the colony collapse disorder. You know, they never really did nail it down all the way. Part of it was the fact that they were working the damn bees to death. Get out of there! Get out of the hive, you little slackers!
Yep.
You know, because they'd turn them loose in the almond groves in California, and then once they were done there, they'd pack them up and go to Texas. And then they'd pack them up and go to Florida. And the poor little things never got to go through an actual season because hives have to go dormant for a while. And, you know, after a while, they just said, screw it, and flew away. I don't have to put up with this crap. I'll go make a hive in a tree somewhere. But, no, I mean, there are these little hopeful moments, Albert. I mean, you know, Jerry Falwell University, right? Crazy people. Well, after the whole Ron Paul teabagging, hang 'em high, let 'em die on the floor of the church thing, somebody had the wise idea at Think Progress of running off down to Lynchburg, Virginia. And they interviewed students at Liberty University. Jerry Falwell, Liberty University. And they didn't, and everyone they talked to, every single one of them said it is unchristian just to allow somebody to die because they're uninsured.
What did you just say?
They said every one of these students they talked to said it is unchristian to simply allow a person to die because they're uninsured.
What? Christians said that?
Yeah. Not just Christians, literalist, you know, don't wear polyester, Dacron, cotton blend slacks because you'll get stoned to death. Old Testament literalist fundamentalist Christians said that.
Oh, but that's just the hopeful youth. They don't really know Jesus like I know Jesus. That's what that shit is. Yeah, that's them being, you know, they're going through their stage. They're so rebellious, aren't they?
Jesus hates all of the sick folks. All of the sick folks in the world. I mean, no, these crazy bastards. This stuff I haven't touched, but it's Friday, Albert, so why not? Can't seem to introduce a jobs bill Republicans. They had them a hearing in the House of Representatives the other day.
Oh, word.
South Carolina's in the House. They had him. No, sit down. We may be drinking by the time we're done with this.
Bob, I was ready. It's time. I can't take it anymore.
These dweebs, these neo-maxi Zoom dweebies in the Republican Party spent taxpayer money. You know, yours and mine, ours.
Uh-huh.
To have a hearing in which they brought in a snake breeder. No shit. They brought in a snake breeder to testify under oath before the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee about how a rule that designates the Burmese python and eight other snake species as injurious and makes it illegal to import them or transport them across state lines. Well, it's going to devastate a small but thriving sector of the private sector economy. They got testimony to that effect, Albert. Shut my mouth. They did.
You know why that's so funny to me? Just on a personal level, besides the fact that, of course, they're not doing anything of any substance. I wish I could show you the guy back in my young, poor days. Well, my younger, poor days. Not to say I don't have older, poor days, but younger, poor days. When, you know, you're forced to live in an apartment. I lived above a guy who, let's just say, Ricky from the Trailer Park Boys.
Okay.
And I mean, for real. I mean, and then not even, I mean, everything. It just is perfect. Except he thought he spoke more Ebonics than anything. But anyway, that was his big thing when the internet came out. He was going to build a web page and all that kind of thing. You know, like with the tinkling, sparkling background and the MIDI music section.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was a Python breeder. Yeah, we gotta take care of those guys, because if you don't take care of the python breeding section, then don't take this to offense, any of you herpetologists out there. But on my experience, they'll be entering your car looking for loose change.
Yeah,
that's what they do, huh? That's what they're doing.
That's what they're doing.
I mean, I don't know how I'm.
Like I said, no, you really want to drink now, don't you?
No, I'm.
I know.
How do they breathe? How?
But it's that way from the bottom to the top. I mean, you've got Rick Perry saying, you know what we need to do? We need to leave Afghanistan, except for leaving Afghanistan. On the one hand, we need to leave Afghanistan, but on the other hand, we need to keep some troops in Afghanistan.
Yeah, they're idiots. They're so stupid. And it's like these are the people that bring you things like right to work.
Oh, yeah.
And that's right to work. It's been one of those my mom happens to live in Idaho, where, you know, they have a bunch of backwards thinking people. And it's, without doubt, it's true. Anybody will tell you. And on her property, there's another piece of property that borders, and it's a quarry farm. You know, the guy's like, he wants to make it a quarry. And he already sold the rights to a corporation. And now, you know, my mom's fighting it. You know, and she's like, oh, they call me a hippie, they call me this, they call me that. I told her to tell, you know, I'm like, you know, you look them in the eyes and you say, what do you care about trees and land for if you, there's nobody there? And I said, courtesy of Bob Kincaid. And, you know, because I'd like to change that, too. I hear environmentalists now, and I squirm. You know, it's what the hell environment. There's no point to it if we're not here to look at it. You know, and it should be a healthy environment, not a, you know, Blade Runner environment.
Right.
But, yeah. So I basically told him, I looked at it, and, you know me, you're not going to fight it and win in Idaho. Yeah, it's just not going to happen. I mean, there's no way. There's as red gets over there. You know, that's the... I mean, she lives, 20 minutes from Ruby Ridge?
Ooh.
Yeah. I told her, I'm like, well, you just better, either you're going to have to accept that they're going to drill 6 wells in their property, and they're going to run a quarry, and they're going to use explosives, and they're going to do everything that they want to do.
Is she on a well, or does she have public water?
She's on a well.
Yeah, well.
And Idaho, in the freedom-loving, we're pig-licking state of Idaho, they're putting a meter on it, and they're going to charge her for it in the future.
Jesus.
So not only
They're going to put a meter on her water well?
Oh yeah, of course. There's no private property rights up there. That's how Republicans are. It's a bunch of bullshit. They don't talk none about it. That's just bullshit. You got $1,000,000. All right, we'll let you go. You can get a KMA card. The rest of you, no, you ain't got squat. Yeah, they put a meter on it. They put a meter on it. Oh, we're not charging you yet. You know, we're not charging you now, but they will. That's how they work. slowly but surely, they want what they want, and they'll scrunch and scrunch and scrunch until they get there, and then they, next thing you know, once they touch it, it's mine. And then they have it. You know? I mean, it's just how
it's all
it is.
Daffy Duck all over it. Mine, mine, it's all mine. Mine.
Yeah.
I'm socially secure. I'm comfortably well off.
Oh, I win. You know? Yeah, I win. That's why, you know, it's nice to hear, you know, I mean, I don't know, are you going to hold your breath that the Liberty University graduates are going to believe that Jesus was some sort of socialist? I don't know, I'm not. You know, I mean, I was just, it's funny you even bring it up, because I was just talking about Jesus the other day. I was just,
you know, it's crazy, but I talk about him all the time. And not even meanly.
No, I like Jesus. I don't have a problem with Jesus. I'm like Gandhi. It's his followers that I can't stand. Because they don't listen. They don't understand. It's like, don't you know what, you know, renounce all your worldly possessions and follow me.
I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians. They're so unlike your Christ.
Yeah. If someone slapped, right? I mean, you know, that's why, and I think it was something to do with 9/11. No, we got the Iraqis back for 9/11, someone said. People still say this crap. They still say this. They have the audacity to repeat something like that. Well, Iraq, you know, they're 9/11. That's how sad it is. Like, dude, what's wrong with you? What? Not only has that been disproven a billion times, it wasn't true ever to begin with. But that's what it is. That lie is just like...
Well, Al-Qaeda was in Iraq. Yeah, there's some fried potatoes now. Some call it a sling blade. I call it a banana blade.
Yeah, it's a banana blade, all right. I'm telling you, bud. I mean, you know, but that's the thing. You know, they said they, you know, they don't listen to turn the other cheek. They don't listen to that.
No, that's no fun. Peace is hard work.
Yeah, peace is hard work. Doesn't, you know, and it doesn't make the lords, the barons, money. You know, the other thing that just blows me away is how people don't, you know, they act like robber barons are a thing of the past. Now, how in the hell can a robber baron be a thing of the past when just last year some hedge fund schmuck, you know, some guy with his mouth made $4.9 billion and got taxed at 15% because it was capital gains tax? You can't expect me. It's capital gains. I could have lost it. He made $4.9 billion. And these are the people, the Michelle Bachmans, the Barry, you know, the Perrys and the Freaks and all these other Herman Cains and all these other these jackwads. They want to sit here and go back to the 50s. Right? That's how that's the paint.
Yeah, everything but the tax rates of the 50s.
But the tax, exactly. It's like, no, I'd love to go back to the 50s. Put them tax, you know, put that cap on American income. That's a sick thing. I think that is the sickest thing when somebody, I mean, it's like that woman that was 700 pounds and she wants to hit 2 tons. Who looks at that and says, oh, yeah, oh, she's in a sport. She's a good gainer. Yeah, oh, yeah, look at her go. Oh, she's getting bigger and bigger by the second. Is that the kind of sport we want to see? No. So how can greed be the same thing? It's the same thing, isn't it? It's one of those sins, right?
Yeah, but even with those upper level tax rates, the funny thing is, Albert, Yale didn't go out of business. Harvard didn't go out of business. The Ivy League kept on being the Ivy League, and rich folks kept sending their kids there and paying tuition and making endowments and foundating and everything. And
Ford and Chevy went bankrupt, right? No? Oh, okay. Huh. Amazing.
Yeah, darndest thing.
Well, but Walmart wasn't around, really, was it? So, I mean, how good could it have
been?
Well,
I mean, you know, no, there wasn't a Walmart. There was a guy who made a living and put a couple of kids through college repairing televisions. And there was another guy who made a living and kept food on the family and put a couple of kids through college, who had a TV store downtown on Main Street.
Hmm.
And there was another guy, and he sold suits.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there was a department store that hadn't been gobbled up by Macy's or any of these others, that was actually a little, well, not a little, but a well-to-do family from the community that had a big concrete Art Deco store on the corner of Court Street and Mobile Street. And you could get anything you wanted there. And the folks who worked in the shoe department knew you by name.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy in menswear knew your suit size when he saw you coming.
Mm-hmm. because you had a union job, you could afford to shop there.
Yeah, you're a blue-collar worker, but by God, you look as good as the banker when you go to church on Sunday.
There you go. And I'll tell you, if we're ever going to get, I mean, you know, and there's things from the 50s that we certainly wouldn't want. And there's some things in the 50s that we probably should do again, like the tax rate. And there's some things, in the 50s that we should, just leave alone. And there are some things that are good about life. And there's some things about history and about, these things of the past, these, traditions that are very good, and we should, mess with them.
Well, then back up a minute, Albert. Back up.
Yeah.
I think I just landed on something. I know why our betters hate, for all of their wanting to go back to when, folks wasn't so uppity and all of that. Now, I know why they hate that. Because the guy who was a welder at the plant, who could buy suits from the guy on Court Street, and could look the banker in the eye on Sunday at church. The banker doesn't like being looked in the eye. And he doesn't like not being able to be obviously the banker, and for the welder to not be obviously the welder. I can remember when people said, well, I don't want to dress up for church. Well, dressing up for church, for all I goon on church, dressing up for church was something kind of nice. Because Mama put on her best, and you put on your best, and you slickety'd the boy's hair, and the daughter had a lovely little dress with crinolines and bullshit, and, and they looked just like... Well, they didn't look like they weren't as good as the damn banker,
mm-hmm.
or the lawyer,
mm-hmm.
or any of those other Republican voters.
Mm-hmm.
And that shit had to go, Albert. It had to go.
Mm-hmm.
So now the banker can still wear his nice suit on Sunday. But you know what? They don't sell suits worth a damn at Walmart anymore. And that man on Court Street, he's out of business. And I won't be taking my son to him the way my dad took me. And the family-owned department store on the corner of Court and Mobile is gone, baby. It is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy who put the two kids through school fixing televisions, well, you can't fix a television anymore. Unless you send it back whence it came.
Mm-hmm.
There are, I only say this, Albert, because I think it's very easy for us to sometimes look at the world we live in and not understand that it wasn't just a product of chaos theory in action. This was planned. Now, I'm not going to get all Alex Jonesy or anything.
But it has to be.
But there was a different time.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these elements, if it was the AME church, folks coming out of church at noon on Sunday looked every damn bit as good as the folks coming out of the Southern Baptist church. Okay? It was black and white. It was multicultural and multispectral through the earnings ladder. I look at pictures, for instance. I mean, all of this really does tie together, unless you tell me that I'm just losing it, okay? There's a connectivity to all of this, Albert. I look at pictures of the civil rights movement, and I see people walking into fire hoses and attack dogs who are dressed like they just stepped out of Sunday school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I'm not gooning on anybody, but I've been to some protests in D.C., they don't look like that anymore.
Mm-mm.
And I'll tell you something. They need to. Because
mm-mm.
America pays attention, whether we know it or not, we pay attention to that kind of thing. Well, how dare they pick them people up off the sidewalk and take them off to jail? That ain't no damn hippie!
Well,
he's got a shirt and tie and a nice pair of trousers on.
I don't know, brother.
I'm not talking about you. I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about on the couches in middle America.
No, I hear you. No, I absolutely hear you. However, I just don't want to be too contrarian on you, but, you know, there was that oil sands protests, and they were arresting everybody.
Yeah, they were. And some people... No, there were some folks there with their ties and stuff on.
Yeah.
And those,
I mean.
and there were, you know, there were old folks there.
Mm-hmm.
There was an 84-year-old woman from Amherst, Massachusetts that I talked to. There was another woman from Minnesota who had an oxygen separator on her back so she could continue breathing because she had cancer, who was there.
Mm-hmm.
And there were young and there were old, and it was an amazing demographic. And it was hard not to notice that this was not the usual suspects. But we don't wind up where we are by accident. It is by design. And it is an overarching thing where we are being put back in our place. It's what went on in Wisconsin, in Ohio. It's that damn stupid plebiscite where, 8,000 people... told all those people in Hollywood, Florida, that they didn't deserve a goddamn pension?
Mm-hmm.
And every last bit of this is orchestrated as if there was somebody behind a music stand with a damn baton.
There is. There is. It's the artificial intelligence, immortal entity known as the corporation. And we are not going to be able to coexist on this planet with corporations in their current state of being. There's no way we could. The rules have changed. Citizens United proves that. All animals are equal, and some animals are more equal than others. They can start up a corporation. Rich people, these elites, can start a corporation and give Mint Magic Underpants Romney $1 million and then close the corporation. And that's perfectly okay. You know, it doesn't matter how we dress now. Because pretty soon we'll be lucky to wear a barrel around us. They don't even make barrels anymore. Well, am I kidding?
No, that'll be a garbage bag, Albert.
That'll be a garbage bag, a hefty bag. Yeah, they make those, don't they?
Yeah, the Koch brothers do.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
See? It's good for them.
Goodness. Oh, Jesus. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It really is amazing.
It is.
You better wake up, people. I'm telling you. You know, I mean... It's just, yeah, we just can't. There's no way we can survive giving them the power that they have. There's no way.
Well, that's the thing. We will not survive if we do.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because, and again, I don't want to get all Alex Jonesy, but a time is coming where these people who hate government will get their way, and they will destroy the vast majority of anything good about the United States that actually does anything remotely good for the people thereof. It will be government of the corporations, by the corporations, and for the corporations, if it isn't already.
Well, it was during the Bush years. You know, that's the thing, you know, we were calling it fascism back then, because it was. And, you know, yeah, President Not Sure is in there, and I wish he would have taken on his Idiocracy, you know. I wish he wouldn't have just taken the name so seriously. Hasn't he taken that name a little too seriously?
Yeah, no kidding.
In the movie. You know,
I was explaining the other night. That's not an insult. President Not Sure was the smartest man in America.
Yeah.
Well, come on, be the smartest man in America. You know, it's not that far of a stretch in terms of imagery. For those who haven't seen Idiocracy, you should. But no, we need a guy who will boldly and firmly step out and say, maybe we don't want to be watering the crops with salty beverages.
You're going to ruin the economy.
Yeah. Water, like, from the toilet?
Yeah. Hey, I mean, that's what it's coming down to. It's coming down to we're going to run out of burrito wrappings. You know? We're not going to have any more of that flattering. We don't have tubs of that anymore.
Fuckers
on for their birthday. What am I going to do?
Right. Yeah. But to extend, believe me. The first time Ferg saw an actual Fuddruckers, he was not okay. No, they really have those, Dad?
They're real?
It's real? You know, and there it was in Chinatown in D.C. Oh, can we go, Dad? No. We don't have time for it. But to extend that metaphor just a little bit, remember, in that future society, 500 years out, they were about to starve to death and die of thirst.
Mm-hmm.
But what was still working? The cable was still on.
Oh, it was blaring. Yeah, it had 50 billion zillion channels. Dayton Network and everything else. The On My Balls Network and everything. I mean, it's like, that's the thing. And that's the thing, you know, we said that...
Monday Night Rehabilitation.
Yeah, Monday Night. Oh, my goodness. It just doesn't stop. It just doesn't ever end. And people just keep doing it. And it's like, you know... And then they have the audacity to rail on Netflix over a couple bucks. It's like, man, if you got that much of a problem, you need to cancel your TV. Because that'll free up at least 10 to 20 times what Netflix costs. What is the average bill for just straight up TV costs?
Oh, Jesus. What is it on average now? $75?
Yeah, $75. And that's if you don't get any.
And, you know, there's another one, you know, there's another one of those moments on the way to the bar, you know, to the Mad Max world. Mm. It isn't being talked about enough because the fix is not in and there won't be one. But, and you know, no, it's not like people not get, well, it kind of is like people not getting their Social Security checks. What happens on October 1st when the post office goes to hell? No, it's not the water company. It's not the power company. It's the damn post office. What happens?
I'll tell you exactly what happened. I know already. As a SNUS aficionado, I could tell you because I've seen it. It's happened when they changed some rules with allowing the shipment of tobacco through the mail. And because they needed to have a signature of 21, the post office just doesn't have the manpower to do that, so they couldn't send via the U.S. Post anymore. Immediately, UPS doubled their rates overnight, instantaneously. The minute they got a monopoly, they'll double their rates. So everybody wants to talk about, oh, we'll go to FedEx, and okay. You watch. You ain't going to send no mail across. You're not going to send no letter. And letters are nice. I'll tell you, it's funny. You know, that's the thing. You know, these people in the bubbles, you know, the media bubbles, they don't understand what's really going on down here. Now, Bob, I'm going to say something, and I'm sure that there'll be some people out there that are probably going to know exactly what I'm talking about. How many of you have a woman friend or are a woman who is knitting? I don't know about you, but over here there's tons of them. And lots of women want to learn how to knit. They just want to make a sweater. And it's actually a cool thing to know how to do. It's a good, I know men that know, that want to do knitting. People are starting to kind of get back to certain ways of being.
Right.
They don't like all this automated nonsense and all this other stuff. So, you know, when we talk about where are we going here, where are we going there, and these are the people driving the car, they don't even know where the passengers want to go. And I don't think, you know, I don't know. I don't think they're in tune. I really don't.
Look, if the post office goes to pot on October
1,
Netflix kind of goes out of business.
Yeah, Netflix does, and you can't even write it.
So where's the CEO of Netflix? You know, this is one of those moments when corporate power actually has some potential for good. You know, it's like what would happen if the Republicans actually did let, say, the food stamp program collapse. Because the phone would start ringing from Bentonville, Arkansas, to various Republican offices all over Capitol Hill, saying, boys, I understand you playing this little game and everything, but you just took a big bite out of Uncle Sam Walton's the monthly income. Now you fix this right quick. What do you say? Or you going to have a hell of a time, son? You're going to have a hell of a time. Well, Netflix needs to be doing that. Anybody who does business through the U.S. mail needs to be doing that.
It does, but then again, you know, you go to theyrule.net and see who's on the board. And if the people on the board are also on the board of FedEx, then that tells you pretty much everything you want to know. You know, I'm not being facetious. I'm no hyperbole when I said about corporations. They're the ones. That's the alien life. That's Skynet. They're the artificial intelligence. They're the ones that are saying that we, look, they're even admitting it. All the Madison Avenue marketing firms, they're not going to market to the middle class anymore. They're not going to market.
You're not going to market to something that doesn't exist.
Exactly. And what built the middle class, everyone? Social Security helped out, and so did, right? Union jobs, right? All these things. And now what is that? Now we got everybody, 8,000 people, you know, picking for the rest of everybody of what, you know, who's going to have union rights. And then, you know, Wisconsin, the same thing. It's like, and it's such an egregious, open face. I mean, the mask is off. It's such a violation. Things that, you know, I think way too many people took for granted. I don't know. I've had many discussions with people.
I guess this is going to make me sound a little bit mean and hateful, but I want those people who voted the police and firefighters and city workers in Hollywood, Florida, who voted away their pensions. I don't want them to sit there with their little secret ballot cowering in a corner, going, "Yeah, that's weird of them. They don't know it." I want them to stand up and own it. You know what? If you're a public worker in Wisconsin and you live next door to somebody who voted to make sure that you had less of a standard of living, I think the person who got screwed has the right to go knock next door, knock on the door, let Al Bundy come to the damn door and punch him in the face. Because you know what? It goes back to what Reverbo says about make it personal. How much more personal could it be for 6.51% of the eligible voters in a township, even if it's Hollywood, Florida, to take away your pension, your retirement, your health care?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's a fix that's not so hard to do, Albert. Maybe we need to. Say that ballot initiatives are not results of ballot initiatives are not valid unless at least 70. Now this isn't mandatory voting, but the ballot initiative isn't valid unless at least 66%.
Yeah.
Of the eligible voters have voted.
Yeah. No.
Somebody's pension? Then by God, make it so that two out of three people you see on the street, you can look at them and say, "You did that to me."
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah. No, that's a real good. That should be done. That should be done without question. I mean, that's the thing. Is like, you know, if you don't have such a percentage of the vote, how can you? You know, I don't think it. I think votes should have to reach certain thresholds. You can't just, you know. You can't just pass these things in the middle of the night. You can't just sit there and have, you know, you don't get your voter ID card. Da, 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 you know, you never know. You never know sometimes with these votes. And people, how many people did I talk to? I didn't hear about it. I didn't know. You didn't vote today? Oh, I didn't get time. I didn't have time.
You really could. You could craft this legislation. Yeah. Any initiative which affects more than X number percentage of the population of whatever polity shall be null and void unless the people voting in said on said initiative equal to or greater than 2/3 of the eligible registered voters.
Yeah, amen. That's a good idea. That should be done.
That didn't. Well, see, this is what happens in our conversations, Albert. I never thought of that before.
There you go.
This only happens because of the big round table that we've created here, brother.
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. I see it. I know what you're saying.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah,
well, I'm sorry it's getting colder up there, but at least you got things to keep you warm.
Indeed.
You take care and have a wonderful weekend, Brother Albert.
You too, sir.
All right.
I'll talk to you on Monday. You be good.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Gosh, I wish we had an audience of millions. If you got a bunch of people pushing that kind of a thing inside of state and local governments, the rat fucking that firefighters and policemen and city workers took in Hollywood, Florida, wouldn't happen. Or wouldn't happen without people being able to say, "You did it to me." And that you can deal with, one way or another. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, so David Brooks is alerting us that, oh, you know, we're going to have to be prepared for, you know, a long bout of unemployment, you know, because, as he puts it, the Democrats are besotted by the myth that the New Deal ended the Great Depression.
Yeah, because he knows better.
This overprivileged prick, you know, is saying that, oh, well, you know, buck up, unemployed. This is just how it has to be. I mean, the absurdity, I mean, it's so disgusting coming from the likes of him and all these other rich fucks who are in the press. I'm so sick of it because they never identify their place. They just are speaking as if it has some sort of relation to the real world. And it's like, he is so disgusting.
Well, it's all filed under the subheading of I've Got Mine, Screw You, right?
Well, yeah, but it's just so, you know, written in this sort of always couched in some, you know, psychology with this guy, some psychologist, latest psychologist he's read. Have you noticed that with him? A lot of his writing is related to these other freakish privileged people, usually in the psychology world to justify, the sort of permanent economic malaise.
Right, and psychologists have all the answers. Just ask Dwayne Buck.
Well, you know, come on. That's what I mean. No, well, yeah, that's the outrageous example of the sort of persistent racism that
1997, that trial went down. I mean,
yeah, it's not really surprising because, you know, no matter what they want to tell us, no one's going to tell me that there's a non-racial reason that 10%, and I repeat, 10% of all black people in this country are locked up. I mean, that number...
How do you hear a number like that and not just be stunned?
Yeah, I'm just saying. That's what's real. And it's kind of like when I hear a story like that where you have some cracker in a cracker court coming up with some idea that, oh, we're going to put you away forever and kill you because we know your skin color means that you're going to commit more crimes later? Well, shit. I guess I see why the Supreme Court had to rule against that one, because that shit is... We don't have a right media, so we don't hear about this stuff until some man is about to be whacked. But then it comes out, and you're like, wow, shit is deep. And then this poor man in Georgia... I guess it's picking up steam, but we'll see. At this point, I would not be surprised if they just, you know, gas him just because they can. And, you know, because it's...
You know, before it can become any more embarrassing.
Well, just because it's, you know, where is that? And it's kind of like, it's just a Negro, and, oh, by the way, you know, a white person died, so someone has to pay, you know? I mean,
White policeman.
Yeah, the mentality is there, and it's just kind of like, you know, the black person in the White House, you know, be damned. You know, it's still going strong.
But going back to the Buck business, though, that's scary, though, because he's not out of the woods. No, it's not even 30 days. What it is his reprieve stands for as long as the petition for certiorari is pending before the Supreme
Court. Oh, right. So
if the Supreme Court grants cert, then the reprieve stays in place until the case is decided.
Right, but they can just dismiss it too, though, right?
If they deny cert, away he goes. And I don't even know if he gets a second last meal.
Yeah. Well, it's too much. I mean, I couldn't even believe, I don't know, I don't even know what to say about that case, too. That case is, I don't even think that this Mr. Davis even did it. That's the thing about this one. And I've been following that case for years, and the more I hear about it, the more it's just a case of a Negro in the wrong place at the wrong time. Let's lock him up, and that's it.
As long as they get to say that they solved the crime.
No, I know, but it's just, it's so blatant. It's just like, my goodness. So we'll see. I noticed that they had, that, you know, Anderson Cooper now, right, is talking about it. You know, so it's definitely sort of permeated the mainstream. But at any rate, another reason why I called is I'm looking at this. I can't even believe that the U.S. is going to open themselves up to, you know, just some severe hating with this vetoing of the Palestinians.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up.
No, because I don't know what bubble the U.S. is in, but trust me, the world is looking at this and thinking, okay, well, yeah, this sounds like a good step. So the U.S. is going to completely destroy further credibility. I don't really even, I was reading an article in the New York Times, and it seemed like the Obama administration, you know, they are aware of what they're about to do, too, which is another thing that's very disturbing. It's like, wait, you're going to cut your own throat, and you know it. What the fuck? Because this is not cool.
But again, Sandra, this is the politics of fear, because if they don't veto it, if the Obama administration doesn't veto it, then he's going to get you hate Israel to damn death. And I hate that kind of political calculus.
Well, no, but see, but it's really, no, but it doesn't, it really is a no-win situation for the U.S. all around, because it's a no-win situation for Israel. This would put Israel, and believe it or not, in a better position.
Yes.
And it's just kind of like, dudes, you know, it's a really scary situation. And it's interesting that Abbas is like, oh, no, bitches, I'm going ahead with it. Why wouldn't he? What the hell have they gotten with the U.S. has the nerve to send envoys over there to try to, oh, you need to go back to the table? What table?
Why don't they just go ahead and say all deliberate speed and have done with it?
Oh, no, but it's a joke, because Abbas already told his people, what few people he have. I never know what the calculus is there, but he said, this is not going to, you know, the next day is not going to change anything. But he has to show some movement. And the song and dance he's been doing with Israel and the U.S. ain't been working. So I think this move is a good move on their part, and the U.S. is going to be so screwed, because France, the U.K., and Germany, the population is overwhelmingly in support of this move. Now, I'm not saying the government. Keep in mind what I said.
Yeah,
the population.
Right, and those governments know.
The population exerts more, as we see with the Euro mess, more pressure on their government than what we do over here. That seems to be quite evident. Would you agree?
Well, yeah, among other things. I mean, you know, that Hollywood, Florida story, you know, the 6.51% of the voters. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah, and so, you know, but it's just sort of a story that's kind of percolating that, you know, we should keep our eye on, because the backlash could be wicked against the Obama administration in the sort of, at least the Arab world. I mean,
nobody's operating under the impression that this is a decision that the United States has reached independently of Israel. The backlash inside Israel could be hell on earth.
I've been thinking, you know, this is such a bad move for, for Obama, you know, in lieu of his, the double standards, it just reeks to the high heavens. So, I don't know, I just thought that story was...
Well, yeah, you wouldn't have batted an eyelash, Sandra, if the Bush administration had vetoed that. But, you know, this is the hope and change guy, right?
Right, and also the whole speech in Egypt, you know, it's like, listen, Mr. Obama, you may think people in America are stupid, they don't pay attention, but, hello... around the world, they saw what you did. You see what I mean? It's like, what you think? People don't remember that? No, they do. And you're going to look just like what you look like. Sort of double-dealing, double-standard fraud. You know, you can't put yourself out talking about how we want to reach out and then pull this shit and think that people are going to be okay about it.
No, because this is not the kind of thing you can solve with a Friday news dump.
Yeah, anyway, so it's supposed to happen on the 23rd is the date that this, you know, and they'll do the veto, and then they can get observer status, at least, if they go to the General Assembly, because the U.S., you know, they don't have a veto down there.
Right.
Now, obviously it doesn't carry the same weight as Southern Sudan. I think that was recognized as a country by the Security Council, so that's a full-blown country. As was Israel, was recognized as a full-blown country by the U.N. This is another irony about it all. It's like, Netanyahu, what? You got a problem with them doing what? You know, what the hell? How were you formed? You know, Israel, they got a lot to answer for. How dare they go against an entity that formed their asses, basically. Balfour Agreement much? You know, let's work in a little bit of history here. Wake the hell up, and the UN is what created Israel as it is today.
But, you know, that won't do for the Palestinians.
No, I know, but it's just, you know, it's like...
I really am scared out of all this. Yeah, it's going to make Barack Obama look like crap.
Yeah, it's not going to help.
But there's nothing new in that, Sandra. But it will, but I'm, con- well, you know what the councils are inside the halls of power, in Israel? I'm sure they're ramped up and ready to, you know, full battle rattle, as they say. And there are going to be some children dying in the streets of Gaza and a shitstorm let loose inside the West Bank. If anybody so much as makes a peep about continuing to be held under the Israeli boot.
Well, and also, I mean, Abbas made a comment that I thought was interesting. You know, of course they go on about, oh, you know, you have to recognize Israel, blah, blah, blah. And he said, Israel is there. No one is going to take its legal status. It's a recognized country. I was like, damn, snap. And also, Hamas, they aren't too keen on this move either. See, everybody stands to lose if this goes forward. And, you know, it'll be interesting to watch. I'm definitely curious to see how it plays out because the Palestinians, it's like the last real sort of occupied, blatantly colonial place on earth right now. So they got a huge amount of moral authority behind them. See, that's the problem. And if they get observer status even, that's going to elevate them because right now they only have some sort of legal entity status. I mean, there's so many different bureaucratical whatevers in the UN, but observer status would still be an uptick from where they are now. So I don't blame him for going forward with this, you know?
No. What's that great quote out there that power... Power never willingly concedes its power to people who ask nicely for it. It has to be demanded.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, isn't this that place?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just another path for them to take. And the way the U.S. is flipping out about it, it's just sort of like, well, what did you really think? People are going to take whatever options are open if they're pressed up against it. And the ultimate worry for me with the Palestinians is that the U.S. could, along with Israel, completely cut them off economically, even more so than what's going on now. Because all the money that comes to the Palestinian Authority, of course, like something out of the India saga, flows through Israel, which I don't know if people are aware of that, and it's thick, man. But that's part of... colonialism. So the U.S. could cut off the money in this process, but so far they haven't taken that track yet because that's even more publicly despicable. But there is that option. So it could get really nasty for the Palestinians.
As if it isn't already.
No, but I'm saying it could even get worse. Anyway,
yeah.
I just thought that was...
No, I'm like I said, I'm glad you brought it up because it desperately needs to be discussed. And... I hate to even think like this, but how are those people who defend Barack Obama at all costs dealing with this? I mean, isn't the corner they've painted themselves into getting tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter, Sandra?
Well, especially when you think about the biggest advocate of this move is Turkey. And, you know, that is like just a crying shame for Israel because at one point Turkey and Israel, they had a fairly decent relationship. And that was sacrificed on that boat. I forget the name of the boat. But, you know...
The Marmara?
Yeah, the relationship between Israel and Turkey is pretty much destroyed now, actually. It's not good. And apparently that Lieber person is talking to... the Kurdish terrorist group, at least as far as...
I was about to say that very thing. I didn't have any research in front of me, but let me guess.
Yeah, and so that's going to be the nail in the coffin for that relationship because of, what is he? He's a fascist. I don't know what else to call that foreign minister. So, as it is, the Turkish authorities are really pushing for this move.
And you know what? Nukes or no nukes, Israel doesn't really doesn't want to get in bad with a bunch of pissed off Turks.
Well, yeah, I mean, but they really, Netanyahu has really done a number on, you know, how Israel is perceived. You know, they're not doing themselves any favors here. And don't forget the sort of fortnightly marches of 300 to 500,000.
Still going on.
It's just like, dude. You know, do you really have time to be, you know, trying to keep the boot on their neck? Looks like shit's flaring up in your country with your own population. Anyway.
And that's what the other boot's for, Sandra.
I guess, but yeah, so Israel is, you know, I hate the sort of interwoven in lockstep with the U.S. It makes me feel nauseous. I'm like,
well, it's personally,
is sick.
It's personally embarrassing to me as an American to see a foreign power given carte blanche to determine for us what our foreign policy is to an entire region.
And
I would say the same thing if it was Japan or Kuala Lumpur or it doesn't matter. But we are not at anything touching upon the state of Israel. The United States does not no longer has the right to unilaterally decide what is in the best interest of the American people.
Well, you know, and it's also, yeah, no, but I mean, it's just going to be sickening for us to watch over the next, up until this election coming up, because to see the Obama administration go back and forth, run, because that past election in Brooklyn the other day,
no.
You know, they're obviously freaking out. So there's panic in the White House, I think.
James Carville was right. Yeah, I don't think he told them to panic, but I think it was more of a reflection of what he probably knows is going on, even though he's not inside the loop.
Right, but there's also the specter of the Susskind book. You know,
I read a little bit about that.
Listen, I'm not too sure why that's been released, and I think they're overplaying their hand because that ain't going to help Obama to be shown to be some president who's being undermined by his own so-called helpers and to see that the financial industry is just as powerful as we think it is, where they're pushing around this new president.
Well, but this idea that they've got an old boys club even inside the Obama White House and that the female advisors were sort of shut out and cold-shouldered.
Yeah, but but this isn't anything to be pleased to hear for him to say, well, I want Citibank to be orally reduced or put into bankruptcy, and to have the likes of that weasel Geithner just ignore him. Oh, anyway, you know what? This phone is going, so
damn.
I gotta go.
I'm sorry. Have a good weekend. An interesting football game going to get played in Atlanta this Sunday. Later, Sandra. Take care. And, let's see, anybody left? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Well, hey, Preston.
I was just posting some Michael Moore goodness on Facebook. I think last week we were kind of despairing over some dynamics, counterproductive dynamics we see among progressives at times, and I was just reminded pleasantly this week that sometimes we pull it together in amazing ways, and Moore got some great airtime on NPR.
Excellent.
Took calls, and then he got some moments of publicity on the Colbert Report as well, and his book went from being his new book, kind of a memoir, Here Comes Trouble, went from being around 200,000 on Amazon's list to about number 40.
And, wow.
Yeah, this weekend he's going to be on C-SPAN's Book TV as well. And he is going to influence some right-wingers. Not a lot, but he noted during his NPR discussion that when Fahrenheit 9/11 came out, the Bush administration did some polling of their people, their typical followers, and they were very concerned with the percentage of Republican voters who were all of a sudden against the war and were considering not voting for Bush. So I think when left-wingers go on Fox and other right-wing forums, there are some people, not a majority, but some who can be reached. And I think people like Ralph Nader are particularly adept at it. And the ego charge and all those disses of him, I think, are lame. I'd recommend Book TV's in-depth discussion with him when he took calls for 3 hours from right-wingers and left-wingers and had a lot of insight. So,
I'm certainly not suggesting that Ralph is in any way unintelligent. I'm more in my conversation with David Preston, I was more concerned really with the people who push the notion, and it's more of a broad-based thing than simply Ralph Nader. There's something in me that let me see if I can work by example. We have this right-wing goon over in the little town not far from me. And there are people who persisted, who are on our side of the debate, who persisted in calling him. And his only response was to start screaming anytime he started losing. And eventually he would hang up on them.
And that's very revealing. It's frustrating and irritating, but it is revealing. But go ahead.
Well, when he doesn't have callers, he's not a talented man at all. When he doesn't have callers, he reads the newspaper to people. And it's about as engaging a radio as listening to paint dry.
Right.
And I kept saying, and what I said to my friends was, let him read the newspaper to people.
Either approach, to me, whatever is moving people, some people will just, let it lie, ignore it. Others, they're going to use those forums and to say their piece. And I think, either way it can work. I don't know. I certainly don't have the answers, but I loved what Juanita was talking about earlier when she noticed a caller calling into, I think, C-SPAN's phone segments,
right,
talking about doing some segments on mountaintop removal. And that's what I was kind of getting at last week, where sometimes, we're constantly talking about what Glenn Beck or what Perry is saying or Bachman, or what Obama should be saying this, and Ed Schultz should be saying this. Sometimes we have to look at ourselves. Where should we be saying it? Where can we say it? C-SPAN's a great forum, underutilized. The Alan Colmes show, it drives me berserk. He gets mocked constantly. The circular firing squad from the left comes out, rapid fire on Alan Colmes constantly. And I'm like, even if you don't like the guy, I like him a lot. I have tons of respect.
He's a smart man.
He is. And his stamina to put up with what? Who does use his forum that's reaching tens of thousands of people and is reaching areas of the country that we oftentimes aren't reaching with progressive outlets? Alan Colmes. And you can,
and you know what,
about him, use his forum. He's begging for more liberals to call in.
And even, if it, in the sort of commercial analytics of that, at least Alan Colmes having a radio show is a recognition by the Murdoch empire that, what the hell, we'll put a forum out there and we'll sell Buy Gold Now ads on Alan's back, because there might be some rube liberals dumb enough to buy this stuff.
That's right. There's that interesting dynamic too.
And I mean, I'm not trying to be a jerk the way I put that forward, but you listen to him far more than I. Does he seem to have any handcuffs on? Are there places he just doesn't go?
It doesn't seem that way. In fact, 4 or 5 months ago, he interviewed Noam Chomsky.
Jesus, there must have been heads exploding all over the right-wing world.
Oh, you could hear them. But it was interesting, though, because it inspired it did inspire some more liberal callers. And he got calls from some guy in the middle of Kansas. It's like, oh, that was great. I'm a big Chomsky fan. And it's like, where have y'all been? It's usually all these right-wingers who, it was Alan, I think, was making, your caller, Alan, making the point of how incredibly vocal the right wing is. It's completely disproportionate. They're like the loudmouths at the party, and everyone just is kind of slinking away and saying, oh, well, I think I'm going to go now, instead of saying, dude, shut the fuck up. We've got something to say. We're sick of your feminazi talk and your eco-wacko bullshit and your constant attack on liberals. Do you have, you know, the unions and all that stuff? We're just letting these people verbally steamroll us in so many ways.
And that's, you know, I mean, that's something that I hope, if we've accomplished anything in the years that we've been at this, Preston, like I said the other night, this is about, you know, creating the conversation space, long form, so that maybe people will feel comfortable talking to other people. And that doesn't just mean people in the line at the grocery store. It means other radio shows.
Yeah.
Because there is something, and I see it a lot. I've gotten emails about it even, about, you know, we don't need somebody that's just as hateful as the other side.
I hear that line all the time, too.
And it drives me nuts, Preston. Yes, we do.
We do, and it's not even my style, typically, you know, to get loud and rambunctious and stuff like that. Like, I'm not Mike Malloy, but I think there's a place for Mike Malloy, you know, to give a little dose back. You know, and it's also, it's a question of, it's not so much the form. It's like, what's it?
Well, it's the same.
Where's the anger directed?
It's the same thing as that guy in Maryland that I talked about last night. You know, his kids are being tormented at school by anti-abortion protesters, and his response to it was to set up an email account and people can contact him, and he's got the contact information for all the right-wingers who have emailed and phoned and mailed him. And he said, what we're going to do, we're going to be polite and we're going to be nice, but we're going to interrupt their lives. We're going to intrude upon their existence to tell them how we feel about them.
Yeah.
And see how they like it. And there, you know, there's something to be said for giving as you have received.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always turn the other cheek.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, try to explain that to the tambourines and granola crowd, will you? I mean, Jiminy.
Sometimes it's turn the table over, you know?
Yeah.
I thought, again, Michael Moore's film, Capitalism, A Love Story, I saw that when it first came out, and I have it was just a lovely evening, and sadly, it didn't do really well. It wasn't like a Fahrenheit 9/11. Your lines outside the door or setting a new record for...
No, but there was information inside that film that I frankly thought was more dynamic and more important than what went down inside Fahrenheit 9/11.
The DVD's rolling, though. It's moving around. You know, the Amazon product section. And then there's the whole, do you use Amazon? Because, you know, Amazon, it's right-wingers and they donate to the Republicans. I mean, at every turn, you make a suggestion as, like, how we can make a noise, do an interaction.
Oh, that's like the...
It's like you're always getting blocked. No, don't do that. It's like the PayPal thing that you were talking about.
Yes.
Okay? See, we're constantly...
And
watch,
you know,
out for this, people. This is a trend. It doesn't come out of nowhere. I think it gets driven by some very sophisticated, demotivating... you know, people throwing sand in our gears, basically. Because they know how...
And you know what? Just to address specifically the PayPal thing, I found out something the other day.
Okay.
There is a... Now, everybody kind of got a little upset when I said PayPal charges 3%. So, you know, if that's $3 on 100. If somebody contributes 100 bucks to the horn, then the net to me, the horn, is 97 bucks. Okay?
Yeah.
And, well, that's just outrageous. Well, guess what, Preston? There is an outfit out there that does electronic transfers for nonprofits. Guess what they charge? 5%.
Oh, I was going to say 3, but I thought that was too cynical. But okay,
and what's more, when you go through that process, and I know this because You know, people are good to us, and I feel like we have to be good to others. My good friend John Wathan, the Hurricane Creek Keeper down in Alabama, is involved in litigation against a coal company down there, and I didn't have it. But sometimes, you know, you're just called upon. And so, yeah, I sent $10 to help them with their litigation against a coal company that's poisoning where he lives.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I went through the whole process, it asked me at the end, would you like to increase this by 5% so that the Hurricane Creek Keeper will get the whole $10? And I thought, wow, you know, that's something.
Yeah.
Because 5%. So, I mean, it's all fairly standard, and I understand, you know, I'm not going to criticize anybody's position of conscience. I won't do that. But by the same token, what you're talking about, Preston, with demotivators, is the absolute truth. And I think last week we talked about that Goodbye to All That article at Truth Out that I've mentioned several times this week as well. It is important reading. From the former Republican staffer, who says that, you know, there are elements within the Republican Party whose only job is to demotivate voters. And when you demotivate voters, you wind up... I mean, I'm just blown away by this story out of Hollywood, Florida, how, four or 5,000 voters can get away with taking away a person's pension, a person's health care.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the only way that works is by keeping people away from the polls. And one of the best ways to keep people away from the polls is to say, well, you know, they're all dirty.
Yeah, yeah, that disinspires people. Ari Berman, I think is his name, did a piece in Rolling Stone magazine, and I heard him interviewed by David Sirota, I think, last week, and he talked about the many tricks they're using these days. There's attitudinal demotivation, and then there's, you know, things they're doing regarding, having to have a license all of a sudden, and whether you have to re-register or not. You know, other countries, and whether felons can vote or not here, oh my gosh, how can you let a felon vote? You know, they've been totally disenfranchising hundreds of thousands of likely Democratic voters. So they love this war on pot so much. These beer barons are there selling all this Paxil and Zoloft and all that you can eat. But no, if you have cannabis, we're going to take your kid, kick you out of school, we're going to take that loan from you, and we're going to put you in a cage, and on and on and on and on and on.
You'll be lucky to work at 7-Eleven.
Yep, yep. And then try to get a job after you get that on your record. Again, Michelle Alexander, she's totally nailed this in her book, The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration. And she was kind of ambivalent. She's quite honest, you know, at first, you know, because she's not a smoker apparently herself or whatever, but when she started looking into it, and she was a former head of a chapter of the ACLU, she just became more and more appalled at it, really. And she is a voice, a powerful one these days. You can check her out on YouTube, Michelle Alexander, the new Jim Crow. And she's bringing it, and very much like, Frederick Douglass encouraged us to, you know. Sometimes it takes a little, dig in the field and making some thunder, you know, to get some change, demanding some change. And again, all these voices we need to give the publicity to. We need to be their ditto heads in our own little ways, you know, just speak our piece, whatever forms we can find. Amazon, again, back to Amazon real quickly, how you can utilize that is either negative reviews of right-wing material. It's like shooting fish in a barrel.
God knows they do that to our side.
They do. And again, I say return the favor. And I think our criticisms can often and easily be more substantive.
Yeah, because they involve brains.
They involve that. They involve something other than corporate propaganda or Pentagon propaganda. You can also utilize the space to make links to real useful material, like that movie The Corporation, the Michael Moore stuff. And I constantly get back, people with the usual lines coming back at me, and I get kind of progressive psycho, you know, and I just blow.
Yeah, it's kind of fun when it happens. I had it happen. I put a comment on a YouTube of the song Dixie, suggesting that Robert E. Lee should have been hanged after the war, and you should have seen the crackers just come running out of the box. Oh, it was delightful. And I got to admit, it's like a cat playing with a mouse, Preston. It's kind of fun. They're not real bright. I hate to say this, but I got to get out of here. We are right at the end of the program. I'll be gone for 4 days next week, but hopefully we'll pick the conversation up again soon.
Sure thing. You know it.
All right. Take care, Preston.
You too, Bob.
Bye now. And we have reached the end of the program. One very kind person stepped up and met Dr. John's challenge. We're about one thrifty $250, $10 contribution away from meeting Susan's challenge. So that would, all told, would mean $200 tonight, and that would be wonderful because, like I said, you're going to be gone a lot of next week, and I know what happens then. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thanks to you for the wonderful conversation, your input via email, and your calls and your participation in the chat room. Chat room's a lot of fun. It's been rolling and rocking along this evening. Thank you all, and thank you for your kind contributions. I try to make sure that I thank everyone by email. If I happen to miss one, please let me know. But I even try to answer them on the fly during the program. It's possible I may miss some over the weekends, and so, but I try not to. But thank you. You're the only thing that makes this all go. It's that simple. Thanks to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks very much to our blogger, Texas Betsy, and our op-ed columnist, Reverbo. John Fox has been busier than a toothless beaver lately, and so the input that he still maintains is ever so valued. The same for Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. He always needs your help, and he provides a lot of content out there beyond the horn programming, and he never sends a bill. WhiteRoseSociety.org. And, of course, thanks go out to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. I'll be with a lot of them next week, and it's going to be a joy and a privilege. And always, 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 Gina, Judy. It's all for you. Rick Smith is next. Have a great weekend, y'all.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Good evening for those of you for whom this is evening. Good afternoon. Good morning. Good night. Good night. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. It is the beginning of a new week. It is a weird week for me. This is the only, just a reminder, this is the only week that I'll be on air, or the only day this week that I'll be on air, because Ferg, me, and a whole bunch of folks from Cold River Mountain Watch are headed off down Kentucky Way for some meetings, required meetings and teachings and learnings, and yeah, you get the idea. So, let's make the best of it. It is Moran Monday, by the way. How could we possibly forget? The Morans certainly won't let us. But I'll be back. Well, we've got it. Yeah, let's do this while it's on while it's at the sort of tip of my brain. A week from this evening, we will be having an American History seminar chat with Dr. Bill and Keith Lilly. Dr. Bill O'Brien and Keith Lilly from the campus of Concord University, Beckley. And so that'll be going on a week from tonight. And then next week's broadcast schedule is, gosh, I hope it's something we can refer to as normal. And after that, the following week gets a little bit weird again because it's on the road to Washington. We'll get through all of this. We really will get through all of this. But we've got this evening to get through, and I think we will get through in good order. With any luck at all, we will be talking long about, 27 minutes from now. We'll be talking with Margaret Flowers. Margaret Flowers, you may have heard on the Molloy program. I'll be talking to her here about what's going to be going on in Washington, D.C., beginning on the 6th of October. The October 2011 movement. That's October2011.org. And I plan to be there for that. So it should be a good conversation coming your way in about 27 minutes, like I said. Either she's going to dial in or we're going to dial her. One way or the other, we'll get her on the air. So we've got that going for us, which is good. Some other things, some here and there, some this and that, a couple of emails. Apparently, and nobody consulted me, apparently September is Gripe at Bob Month here at the Horn. All griping is free. I got up Saturday morning. Or was it Sunday? Let me see. Yeah, it was Saturday morning. No, it was Sunday morning. Got up Sunday morning to find this in the inbox from a longtime listener. Hey, Bob. And he wants you all to know that it's little letters, B-O-B, small B, small O, small B. Notice the small caps, Jeb says. Here's an idea. Instead of moaning and bitching about donations falling off while you're gone, how about getting the members of your family to fill in? Or maybe your neighbor. Or maybe one of your listeners. Or maybe me. I work cheap, free. The world does not stop because you're not on the radio. Oh, this talking thing is so difficult, laborious, and difficult. I guess if I practiced in front of a mirror for another 10 years, I might be ready. I listen because I like what you say. My family and coworkers are all right-wingers. What's the matter with you? Get over yourself. Like I said, and mercifully, there's only 11 days left in the month. September is Bitch at Bob Month here at the Horn. Well, let's see. The kids don't know how. My lovely wife will be busy taking care of them. Many of my neighbors are right-wingers, too. And frankly, I don't have one of the listeners. I don't have any way of transporting all this stuff to somebody else and setting it up and then turning it around and to bring it back. And no, it doesn't work that way. But I have, over the course of the last 48 hours, gotten over myself. That does not, however, change the fact that donations to the program will fall off dramatically while I'm gone running reruns, because, you know, who wants to listen to a rerun, right? And that is where, thank heaven, that is where Paul from Portland comes in. With an email I received just a little bit ago called the While Bob's Away Challenge. Dear Bob, catching up on podcasts from last week. I heard that you're on the air today and gone the rest of the week. In an attempt to bolster contributions while you're gone, I would like to put forth a challenge. I know that it is hard for people to contribute. I myself haven't contributed since July of last year to help with the septic system. I don't have any real excuse, just an explanation. I'm on student loans now, and the money is only to be used for books, tuition, rent, food, travel, car repair, etc. I'm paranoid about the fact that my loans could be canceled by some Bush administration holdover who would think it fun to pull the rug out from under me for contributing to a liberal show. However, I've been living tight over the summer, and loans are coming in soon. I find myself with leftover money. It is my money, not a loan that I can give. So I'd like to put forth this challenge. I have $50, and it will be the only money I can give Bob until I graduate with my master's in biochemistry this June. I'm looking forward to getting the graduation notice. You know, it's inspiring to see all of this as it happens. You know, it was just a couple of months ago that we got to start referring to our buddy, Horn archaeology consultant John, as Dr. John. And hearing from Paul in June of next year that he's gotten his master's will be good news. Sandra celebrated her graduation not too awfully long back, and she's working on a graduate degree now. It's inspiring. Anyway, back to what Paul said. So I'd like to put forth this challenge. I have $50, and it will be the only money I can give Bob until I graduate with my master's in biochemistry this June. I'd like to make it count. So from now until the end of this month, I will match every dollar contributed with 50 cents of my own up to $50 of my own money. I know that most challenges are dollar for dollar, but come on, I'm broke, and I'd like to make my money go further. So if $100 is raised for the challenge, I will give 50 for a total of $150. I don't care how you contribute, PayPal, snail mail, or finding Bob on the street during his trip and putting cash in his hand. Yeah, I'm not going to be on the corner with a cup and a pencil. I just won't. We're not quite down to that yet. Oh, get over yourself, Bob! But I would like to call on members of the Horn family that are usually not regular contributors, Paul says. I know it's hard to contribute due to the economy or a student loan situation like myself, but please contribute. Nothing would make me happier if this challenge was made by 100 $1 contributions from people who are not regular contributors. However, if you're a regular contributor, please feel free to participate. Well, I'll leave it to Bob to name the challenge and to tell people how to let him know that it is for my challenge. Let's all pool together and let Bob not worry about contributions drying up while he's gone this week. Enjoy your time this week, Bob, walking the walk. Paul from Portland. Well, that certainly seems an appropriate name, the Paul from Portland Challenge. And he's going 50 cents for every buck. So we need $100 to get to Paul's challenge. And that makes for $150. So let's see how that happens. During my absence and for the remainder of the month of September. Although it would be awfully nice just to folks generally respond well to these challenges because they see that other people are doing their part, and I think it helps to build a sense of camaraderie. If you know what I mean. So let's see how this will all work out. And you can just put in the notation. You know, if you go to PayPal, they offer you an opportunity to make a little note. Just put Paul from Portland Challenge. Although, truth be told, as far as PayPal is concerned, I don't think they'll accept anything less than $5. Snail mail is different. And the snail mail address is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. It's right there, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, P PMB, stands for personal mailbox, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. Anyway is fine by me. And a reminder, and just to update you, it happened after we were off air on Saturday. After Dr. John's challenge was met, Susan also issued her own. And that was met over the weekend with a final contribution that came in Saturday or Sunday and pushed us over. So thank you very, very kindly for that. This from Ron in Raleigh. Hey, Bob, you could stand on a corner with a sign that says, "We'll pontificate for contributions." I don't have the funny hat for pontificating, Ron. Nor, apparently, do I fill the requirement that I be a former member of the Hitler Youth and anti-aircraft gunner who fired on American and other Allied aircraft. So, no pontificating for me. Pontificate. Ron, Ron's feeling frisky this evening. But I'm over myself. I'm completely over myself. Now, where to go this evening? Well, it is Moran Monday. It is Moran Monday on the horn, and, well, who better than to start with, you know, and I had the audio, and somewhere along the way, the machine reset itself, and now God only knows. But I did have the audio. But I don't now. So we don't have to listen to his creaky, crinkly, wrinkly, old, nasty, old, gooey voice. We can just read the quote. It's Moran Monday. And while there are a lot of Morans out there, Godzilla from Wasilla comes to mind. Certainly, Michelle Bachmann is a Moran. Rick Perry is a Moran who can't even write his own stuff, if you have seen that story. And weird that this is coming from a fellow conservative. The blogger Jennifer Rubin over at the Washington Post has said that Rick Perry did not write a pro-Israel op-ed that was published in the Wall Street Journal as well as in the Jerusalem Post. So I guess, is that technically plagiarism? Taking someone else's work for your own when the work that's not your own was written for you? That seems a shade of difference, but probably close enough for government work, as it were. This op-ed, which was, it didn't show up in brown crayon on butcher paper, so that probably was the first dead giveaway that Rick Perry had not written this piece. The piece contains what is referred to by Ms. Rubin as a cherry-picked quote. This from the opening paragraph of the Rick Perry op-ed for the Wall Street Journal and the Jerusalem Post. Historian T.R. Fehrenbach once observed that my home state of Texas and Israel share the experience of, quote, civilized men and women thrown into new and harsh conditions beset by enemies, unquote. Yeah, that's right. Texas is just like Israel. Because after all, Israel, like Texas, was formed by people who went into a land that was not their own so that they could hold slaves. wait. If you buy the Exodus myth, the Hebrews were slaves leaving Egypt and went into somebody else's land. Well, either way you slice it, they were beset by enemies, and that makes them just alike. And the whole point of the thing was to attack Barack Obama, naturally. It was to attack Barack Obama. For things that aren't fully, well, maybe they're comprehensible inside the tiny empty space where brains and humans sit, but is occupied by vacuum in the skull, inside the skull of Rick Perry. His idea being that Barack Obama is somehow not pro-Israel enough. Now, as you may recall, on Friday, I believe it was, Sandra brought up the fact that there's a bit of a Donnybrook stewing in the UN Security Council. Because coming up this week, Mahmoud Abbas of the Palestinian Authority is going to seek full membership in the UN. Now, the way the votes are counted, it has to have 9 yeas and 0 vetoes. Guess who's going to throw the veto? Yeah, the Obama administration that Rick Perry says doesn't like, isn't pro-Israel enough. Now, as Sandra pointed out, this is going to be a monumental screw-up, any way you slice it. Let's see. 4 in favor of the Palestinian bid: China, India, Lebanon, Russia, South Africa. Undecided: Bosnia and Herzegovina, Brazil, Colombia, France, Gabon, Nigeria, Portugal, United Kingdom. The UK said to be still refusing to clarify exactly how it will vote when Palestinians bid for full membership. Also noting the fact that a vast majority of the British public support Palestinian statehood. And then in that teensy-tiny list opposed to the bid, Germany. They are fully committed to voting against the full membership for Palestine. And then us. We believe the move would be counterproductive and derail negotiations with Israel. And while not a majority, a plurality of Americans support Palestinian statehood, I think it's probably safe to say that the vast majority of listeners here to the Horn family do. But the whole point is Rick Perry, who said that Obama just, well, he doesn't support Israel enough. Now, mind you, Barack Obama has never stopped the river of money that flows to Israel from you and me. And I don't mean any little old miserable ass dries up in Summertime Creek either. I mean, this is a river of money. Nope. Still going strong. And Israel doesn't want Palestinian recognition in the UN, so what Israel wants the United States to do, Israel gets. Because as Americans, we're no longer allowed to have our own independent foreign policy where Israel is concerned. frustrating, yes. But somehow, using his brown crayon and some butcher paper, and words that have more than one syllable, Rick Perry managed to write, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, an op-ed that was published in the Jerusalem Post and the Wall Street Journal, a pair of pretty much right-wing rags. Jennifer Rubin said, and I quote, "Perry almost certainly didn't write it. We know that." Oh, this is going to sting. "We know that because his own foreign policy views are rudimentary. A ghostwritten piece so far above his current abilities highlights the concern." Now, she went on and she said, "Now, of course, it's understandable. Most politicians have these things written for them." And that's true. I mean, that's what all the hacks and flacks are for. And no offense, but when, you know, your third grade class gets its official signed portrait of Barack Obama to hang on the wall because the all 30 kids or whatever wrote off for it, odds are that was done by somebody else. Or a machine signer. Whatever. It's understood. But the point that Jennifer Rubin was trying to make was that, well, she said, quote, "until he personally could articulate his thoughts in detail, advisors," whew, oh man, this stings. I mean, this is like alcohol on a skint knee. "Until he personally could articulate his thoughts in detail, advisors should forego the pretense of sophistication." Man, the pretense of sophistication. I'd suggest that Jennifer Rubin not go anywhere near Texas for a while. Because, I don't know, the Texas Rangers, and I don't mean the baseball club, I mean the law enforcement unit, will pick her up. And the next thing you know, we'll all be standing around saying, "Please don't execute Jennifer Rubin." I mean, it's dangerous down there. Sheesh. Because you understand that last sentence is kind of Washington speak for "he's a moron." Because that's what that means. "Until he personally could articulate his thoughts in detail, advisors should forego the pretense of sophistication." Oh. No, that's fancy Washington speak for, man, is this guy dumb. And not just a little bit, a whole lot dumb. Yeah, in other words, you can't tell the difference between Palestine, Texas, and, ditto, Palestine. Because I'm pretty sure there's a Palestine, Texas. That's just one of those things. Yeah, right. But nevertheless, the thing went out there and is something less than... Right, it does not even... There, you read it and you just don't say, "Oh, well, look, sure, he wrote this." It doesn't compute. Now, here's the fun part. Let's see, comment from the Jerusalem Post. Comment. "The Palestinians' illegitimate UN gambit." By Rick Perry. "The historic friendship between the United States and Israel stretches from the founding of the Jewish state in 1948 to the present day. Our nations have developed vital economic and security relationships, in an alliance based on shared democratic principles, deep cultural ties, and common strategic interests. Historian T.R. Fehrenbach once observed that my home state of Texas and Israel share the experience of civilized men and women thrown into new and harsh conditions beset by enemies. That still makes my head hurt. Surrounded by unfriendly neighbors and terror organizations that aim to destroy it, life has never been easy for Israel. Today, the challenges are mounting. The Jewish state faces growing hostility from Turkey. Its three-decade-old peace with Egypt hangs by a thread. Iran pursues nuclear weapons supply. Its leaders vow to use to annihilate Israel. Terrorist attacks on Israeli civilians from Hezbollah and Hamas continue. Blah, 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 blah. So maybe in the next T-bate or whatever, Michelle Bachmann can sort of maybe get some of her cred back by asking him if he really, really honestly and for true wrote that op-ed. The fun part, as I mentioned, Rick Perry's advisors on foreign policy reported foreign policy contacts, Don Rumsfeld and Douglas Feith. I'm going to have to go back and go over the op-ed with a fine-tooth comb and see if I see any references to known knowns and unknown gnomes. Then we'll know it was Rumsfeld. A war criminal in his own right. So, that's where we find ourselves starting, and it's time for me to get Margaret Flowers on the phone. It's just going to be a short conversation. And we will go from there. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I took a walk around the world to ease my troubled mind. I left my body lying somewhere in the sands of time. But I watched the world look to the dark side of the moon. I feel there's nothing I can do.
27 and a half minutes before the hour, and I don't want to waste a single second getting to the phones. Margaret Flowers is with us, Dr. Margaret Flowers, an organizer for the October 2011 event coming up in Washington, D.C. October2011.org is the website. Dr. Flowers, thank you for joining us this evening.
Oh, thank you for having me on tonight, Bob.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. I'm very excited about what you all have been working toward in Washington here. Well, just a couple of weeks away, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I think we have about 17 days.
I have a feeling it probably feels like you could use another month or two, but these things never work out quite that way. What kind of plans are underway?
Well, we're very excited about the October 2011, the October 6th action in Washington, D.C. in Freedom Plaza. We have thousands of people that have already signed up. People are coming from across the country to join us, to stay in Freedom Plaza. And we call this action Stop the Machine, Create a New World. The Stop the Machine is the corporatism, the corporate powers that control our political process and our corporate media message, and then militarism, which causes us to have such a huge presence around the world, stretching our resources thin so that we can't meet our needs here at home. So we will be engaging in resistance focused on that, but we're also calling it Create a New World because we've identified 15 core crises in this country, things like the need for health care, education, jobs, housing, cleaning up the environment. And we're going to be working on solutions because we know that there are evidence-based solutions to each of these crises. And we're going to create a document of specifically where we want to go in this country, what we want to see done.
Well, that's one of the things that strikes me as most dynamic about this is the fact that it is not a single-issue occupation or a single-issue rally, protest, demonstration, whatever word we choose. You're looking at environmental issues. You're looking at political, monetary issues. You're looking at the labor workers' rights issues. What kind of a coalition have you pulled together for all of this?
Well, it's fantastic because people from all of these different issues have come together. Organizations that advocate for these different issues have endorsed this action, and people who advocate for the different ones because it seemed like we were all starting to come to the same awareness at the same time, is that each of our issues, when we try to advocate for a single issue, we don't have the strength or the numbers of people to really shift the power away from this corporate domination of our political process. And so we end up with, if we get anything passed legislatively, it's so weakened that it's practically ineffective and always seems to benefit the industries that profit. So so many of us were talking about it, you know, we need something more, something better. And all of these issues are connected, particularly for me with health. Our health really does depend on having education, a clean environment, you know, adequate food and water. So they're all connected, and the consciousness really seems to be that the time has come to join together in solidarity and really create some strength in numbers to change things.
Well, the other thing that is remarkable about this is that it is, as far as I can tell, open-ended. And I think that's so very important, Dr. Flowers, simply because if the power people in Washington know that, yeah, okay, so a million people are going to show up on Saturday, they're going to be home by Monday, then they really don't have to listen to us anymore at all, do they?
Right, and they don't. Frequently they leave town. So these Saturday rallies that we've been having for so many years where we bring hundreds of thousands of people to the city are completely ignored. They don't end up having an impact on the policy that's put forth. And so that was something that we also were tired of doing. We really don't have time anymore. The way things are going in this country with the economy, with the environment, healthcare, education. We really can't just wait for somebody else to do this for us or do these symbolic actions hoping they'll have some difference. What a big part of this is becoming less compromising, that we need to say, you know what, this is what we need to meet our human needs, and we're staying until we see some change in that direction. It's also looking not to leaders to do it for us, but empowering ourselves to find ways to put pressure on the system, to undermine the system that we have, so that we can start shifting towards meeting our human needs.
Does this include suggestions for actual concrete policy changes as well?
Well, that's what we'll be coming up with during the occupation. Part of what will be done in the plaza is meeting. We're dividing up into 15 different committees, one for each of the core issues that we've identified. And we want these committees to be, and they are becoming, composed of people who are affected by the issue and people who are doing the advocacy work on the issue, because this is not what we see in Congress. In Congress, it's the industries that profit off of it that decide the policy. But the people that are living it and the people that are doing the work, looking at what models work, they're the ones that really have the solutions. And so we will be coming out with a very specific solutions. We'll be holding assemblies each night. If all works out, we'll be able to live stream these assemblies so that people who can't make it to D.C. can still listen in on what solutions are being talked about and why, and participate in this decision making. So at the end, we will have very concrete solutions for each issue.
Well, those streaming issues are something that we have worked very intimately with for the last 5 years, 6 years, well, more than that, here at the Horn. And so if we can be of any help, helping folks figure out how to go about doing that, we are by all means happy to do so. I'm looking forward to being there on the 6th. I'm looking forward to sitting down with the Environmental Committee and talking with them a little bit about the horrors that we live with here in Appalachia. In terms of the it started out as an environmental complaint, but now there's so much data out there that suggests that people are literally dying because of what the coal industry is doing to us here and what the coal industry does in other places, that it really has become a healthcare issue in its own right and a human rights issue. I'm looking forward to being a part of that discussion. Let me ask, this is, of course, the foundation of all of this is nonviolent in its nature. Is that correct?
That is correct. That's a tactic that we decided is the most effective tactic at this point, because we don't have the strength to match, our national security state in terms of at a violent level. So we believe very strongly that we must maintain nonviolence during this action.
And I find that interesting because there was, and I'll be sharing this with the audience later, the right winger, the Andrew Breitbart called for people to begin gunning down folks like you and me over the weekend, and so I think having a nonviolent determination behind all of this is absolutely critical. Just one question, and it's something that always concerns me, and I've been involved with several of these. Are you prepared for the eventuality of interests trying to infiltrate and change that focus, agent provocateur, if you will?
Absolutely. Many of us that are organizing this have been doing activism for years. Some of the people that have organized this have experienced infiltrators directly. So, yes, we absolutely anticipate that where there will be agent provocateurs, that probably we've been infiltrated already in terms of our group of organizers, which is pretty broad. But we decided that it's, in terms of organizing, that it's best to be out in the open. We didn't want to run into those issues of not being able to trust each other. So we are being open about what we're doing. And we have the veterans are training to be peacekeepers. They've started their training already in August. They'll continue in D.C. So they'll be ready to try to identify and isolate people who instigate violence and turn them over to the police, even if they happen to be police. I was in New York City on Saturday for the beginning of Occupy Wall Street, and as I was leaving, we were getting into our car, we saw two police officers in plain clothes get out of an unmarked car. There was an officer inside with a uniform, and I photographed them walking into the protest area. So, you know, we know that this is just standard procedure.
Well, I had a feeling that would be the sort of answer, because it's obvious how much work has gone into all of this. I know your time is limited, and I don't want to take too much more of it because I know you've got important things to do. But how can, apart, if folks can't get there for the event itself, how else can they help?
Oh, there's lots of ways. This is really just the beginning of what we see as an independent movement, which is what we need in this country. We don't think right now that focusing on electing people is a good place to put our energies. We need to build a strong independent movement with a strong media that's willing to cover it like you. And so people can join the online community through our website, October2011.org. They can participate in the discussions that we have there. They can watch the action, you know, hopefully online and give feedback in terms of what they're hearing there. We certainly need donations. All of this work has been done completely as a volunteer. But we are, you know, having to buy things like porta potties for people that stay in the plaza and some food and medical supplies and those kinds of basics. So donations are helpful, but mostly it's just if people will get engaged, give us their feedback, spread the word to others that this independent movement is building. If you want to plan a solidarity action in your community, that would be fantastic, too. You can let us know, and we'll post information about it on the website. But this really is about educating ourselves, empowering ourselves, growing our numbers, being willing to do what needs to be done in order to change things around, and we all have the ability to do something.
Wonderful. Dr. Flowers, I thank you for all the work that you've already put into all of this. I look forward to meeting you when we get there to D.C. And if we can be of any further help between now and then, please don't hesitate to reach out to us, okay?
Thank you. We probably will reach out to you on the live streaming issue because, as I said, this is all volunteers, so we'd love to have your expertise. So thank you very much for having me on today, Bob.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Flowers, and a wonderful evening to you.
Same to you.
Bye now.
Freedom Plaza.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. I actually know where Freedom Plaza is. Dr. Margaret Flowers there from October2011.org. It's almost a certain, well, it is a certainty. I'll be there. Hopefully a couple of others of my colleagues from here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia, will be there as well. October2011.org. Engage in the discussion. Participate. It appears to be a genuine populist movement, and that means, yeah, you've got a voice. You don't have much of one in Washington, D.C., with people who are spend more time with lobbyists than they do with, you know, working folks. If you followed the discussion earlier today following President Obama's remarks, you know that. The right wing spent the weekend and into today running out in defense of millionaires. One of them, a member of Congress, even showed up on MSNBC this morning in a conversation with Chris Jansing to bemoan the fact that when all is said and done and after he's done bought all these groceries and whatnot, that he ain't got. I know, it's hard. It's really, really hard. He's only got $400,000 a year after he's fed his family. I don't know how he gets by. Yeah, his name is John Fleming. He's a repiglican from Louisiana, first elected in 2008. Takes a lot of nerve to whine like that. Well, here, listen.
With all due respect, Congressman, the Wall Street Journal estimated that your businesses, which I believe are Subway sandwich shops and UPS
yes.
stores, very successful,
yes.
brought you last year over $6 million.
Yeah, that's before you pay 500 employees, you pay rent, you pay equipment and food.
Now, hold on, okay? Before you pay 500 employees, that's Subway and the UPS store. You got that? 500 Subway and UPS store employees. I am not going to wade off into the Bob in the math swamp stuff. So anybody that wants to whip out the calculator and just sort of rough out 500 people making minimum wage and subtract that from $6 million... And I don't know, do some research on Representative Fleming. How many Subways? He says 500 employees. That's got to be a lot of Subways. So he's probably got several power bills. He's got several UPS stores. There's probably some electricity involved. But just rough it out, especially the folks who have run businesses, and I know there are a number of you out there. What What's that like after he's paid the, because remember, that's $6 million, but that's before you pay 500 minimum wage employees at Subway. Oh, okay, maybe the manager and the assistant manager aren't making minimum wage, but they're not pulling down any $60K a year. Really? Okay. I just got a note from Jude saying that she had lost the audio during the conversation with Dr. Flowers. So let me know if you're losing audio as well. Everything appeared to be okay as we went forward. But I'll let Jude know. No, your heart just breaks for this guy, right? $6 million a year, and he doesn't get to keep every penny of it. Kind of like to know how old his car is, wouldn't you? I mean, I'm not advocating any class warfare, but because you know that's what they say it is. Lindsey Graham cracker said it was class warfare over the weekend to talk about the rich actually paying paying as much in taxes as a middle class couple earning maybe $40,000 a year, trying to feed a family on that. No, that's class warfare. Little Eddie Munster, I mean, Paul Ryan said, you know, it's class warfare. It might make for good politics, but it's not good economics. But anyway, let's go back to John Fleming and his sad and sorry plebeian life.
Yeah, that's before you pay 500 employees, you pay rent, you pay equipment and food. The actual net income of that was only a mere fraction of that amount.
So you're saying that if you have to pay more in taxes, you would get rid of some of those employees? These are not as successful.
I would say that since my net income, and again, that's the individual rate that I told you about, the amount that I have to reinvest in my business and feed my family is more like $600,000 of that $6.3 million. And so by the time I feed my family, I have, you know, maybe $400,000 left over to invest in new locations, upgrade my locations, buy more equipment.
You do understand, Congressman, that the average person out there who's making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year, when they hear that you only have $400,000 left over, it's not exactly a sympathetic position. You understand that?
Well, again, class warfare has never created a job, and that's people that will not get jobs. This is all about creating jobs, Chris.
Yeah, by God, raise his taxes, and he's going to throw some people out on the street just to show you plebes. Damn proles.
This is not about attacking people who make certain incomes. You know, in this country...
How about that? Did you catch that? Let me roll back to that for just a second.
Get jobs. This is all about creating jobs, Chris. This is not about attacking people who make certain incomes.
This is not about attacking people who make certain incomes. This is not about attacking people who make certain incomes. Coulda fooled me. Because that's all they've been doing. You know, President Obama, whether it was wise or not, proposed a tax break based on continuing the payroll tax cut that went through. I mean, the Republican Party just loves tax cuts, right? Not that one, sorry. It doesn't affect the right people. Attacking people just because of a certain income, well. But beyond that. You know, I just realized I didn't even get to the story I meant to start the program with. We'll find our way around to that in a minute. Beyond that. Note the language. Pay attention to what these people say. Because they really are speaking what's on their minds. Here in America, in the year 2011, asking this freak to pay the same as a school teacher in terms of a tax rate is an attack on him. Now, I'm sure him being a repig-licking congressman from Louisiana and all, you probably couldn't swing a cat inside his house without scraping up against something with the flag on it. He's probably like that Doonesbury character who has a different flag pin for his pajamas and for his blue suit and his charcoal suit. Probably got a crate of American flag pins. But if you ask him to actually support the country that makes it possible for him to be as wealthy as he is, well, that's an attack on him. Note, as I said, the use of the language. It's an attack. It's warfare! I haven't read any stories about his shrill, shrieking wife being dragged by her hair out into the street and bludgeoned by mobs of angry Social Security recipients. Or even perhaps more likely angry 40-somethings like me who are about to get ripped off because of people like him. Those stories don't exist. For the most part, people won't get outside the comfort of their easy chairs or their sofas. And that's part and parcel of what this event beginning on October 6, 2011 in Freedom Plaza is about. Getting people out of their seats and into the streets. Even if you can't make it to D.C., do something near home. Because odds are, near home needs to be seen and needs to see you, too. Sometimes it's just a matter of standing with a sign, even if you have to stand all by yourself. Because in that moment when you are seemingly alone, you realize that you're not. That you have the moral force of millions of Americans behind you. And what you're actually doing, and perhaps it's hard to recognize because we see so little of it, what you're actually doing is leading. David in Tennessee, who constantly, they're not constant, well, is good to, well, just knows my failings with mathematics. Here, let's put it that way and just deal with it. Be careful with that math on those 500 employees, Bob. You're onto the minimum wage bit and the zero benefits. Good. Don't forget that none of those minimum wage grinders ever work 40 hours, nor do they ever get OT. Mostly they get 24 to 30 hours. Mostly I think he's doing some sort of a dodge on the numbers of employees. And continuing, and it takes 200 large to feed his family? Somebody eating way high on the hog. I mean, Jesus, now that math I can do. $200,000 divided by 12. He's spending more than $10,000 a month on groceries? That's a lot of hummingbird tongue. That's a lot of lark's vomit. That's a whole bunch of wolf nipple chips. Ocelot's noses. That's not high on the hog. That's the whole hog. And his brother.
I mean, even if you're the Osmonds, that's a lot of money every month for groceries.
Thanks, everybody. Everybody noting audio is okay for them. I appreciate you letting me know, and Jude says it's back on for her as well. News Ninja Gene, none too happy. These billionaires don't want to pay the same rate as the everyday folks? Ain't that a flat tax? Haven't his class been advocating that? Well, F me! Bastards won't even support their own proposal? F them! Fire up the international! I understand, Gene. I understand. Oh, yeah, this is... this is where the... true colors really, really do begin to shine. He makes the same money, Representative Fleming, as 8 median household incomes. Think progress noting, and how hard does the congressman work to make that? He told the Wall Street Journal, quote, that he spends very little time on day-to-day management, though he weighs in on broad strategy decisions. I monitor the reports. I'm certainly in communication with the managers. You'll notice also that he said that his financial success is a virtue. His success is a virtue. Oh, Preacher Calvin, I'm so rich. Yes, it's a virtue. It means I'm a good man. I'm wealthy. It means I'm a good man. You know, I'm going to have to get my Kindle in here so I can fire up that quote from Raymond Chandler and just keep it handy about the things that occur by the, you know, when you really get into the serious money, by the time you get there, you've done some nasty crap to get it. Darlene writing in and noting, the congressman and his family must be having lobster every morning, noon, and night with David Brooks. Oh, Mom, I don't want lobster on my cornflakes again today. Can't we have oysters? Darling, don't be recherché. Oysters are so lower tax bracket. Jeebus. And David in Tennessee's audio has been a little bit dodgy, buffering and blipping. If you have problems, shoot me a note so that I'll know, because we're sending just fine and dandy from here, which might mean there's a server issue if everybody and their cousin is on the server. But we got a lot of room for listeners on there. So that's where we find ourselves this evening at the end of the first hour of filibobstering. And of course your calls are welcome as we finish it. Well, we've got 2 more hours to go. It's Moran Monday on the horn. I never even got to our number one Moran. Maybe after the break. We'll take a little break and come back. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And I'm happy to announce that we have 3 out of the 7 slots filled. We have $30 in matching toward Paul in Portland's While Bob's Away challenge. So only $70 to go, and I'm sure he'll be tickled to hear it. Thank you very, very kindly. Well, like I said, take a break and come back. Light them up. We've only got this one evening. No, I'm not going to play Bob Seger's We've Got Tonight, okay? You can just forget about that. No, this is for those of us out there who just don't quite make that just getting by $600,000 a year. This is the horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Bubble Genius, it's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius, it's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius, we got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Nine and a half minutes past the hour here. Getting started on hour two of the program. A very kind, uplifting, and encouraging note coming in from Barry. Subject line, don't go changing. You cannot make me play Billy Joel music on this program. You just can't. Barry says, don't go changing. Please don't get over yourself. It's almost metaphysically impossible. And, I asked for it here, and it happens out there. Got an email in from Jenny. Bob, doing the math. $7.50 an hour times 40 hours equals $15,600. And see, right off the bat, just like David in Tennessee suggested, you know, it probably isn't 40 hours, and they never see overtime. But anyway, working with those 40 hours, $15,600 a year times 500 people... is $7,500,000. He made $6 million, had $600,000 left over. $7,500,000 minus $600,000. The real payout for 500 is $6,900,000. $6,900,000 divided by 500 equals $13,800. That $13,800 divided by 52 equals $265 a week average employee salary. Jenny says, now who's the hero? The man who made millions or the people who work so hard so he can make millions so more people can have a job? What an ass. Yeah. See, that's the thing about making money. It doesn't require... being a politician does not require a lot of brains. It requires ambition that rises to a psychologically diagnosable level. And the same with these millionaires. Didn't require a lot of brains. It required a dogged determination to make millions no matter what and at whatever expense. So, yeah. So it somehow rings hollow. And it rings even more hollow in light of this.
What did you think of this?
Well, Neil, you know, it's really funny because when I looked at that just this morning, and I think they're trying to imply that there's some hypocrisy going on here. But there really isn't any hypocrisy on my side. The hypocrisy is on the other side. I don't want to raise my taxes. I don't raise your taxes. I don't want to raise Warren Buffett's taxes. I don't want to raise anybody's taxes. So I don't see what the hypocrisy is there. But on the other hand, Warren Buffett is saying he thinks he ought to pay more money. Well, you know, there's nothing stopping him from doing that right now. He can pay more money to the federal government if he wants to, but don't ask me and a whole lot of other Americans to contribute to the cause that he believes is worthy. That's really for us to decide.
What that was commentary on Neil Cavuto's show on Radio Rwanda by Representative John Campbell, a Republican from California. Latest valuation of John Campbell of California, Republican. As of 2009, he was worth somewhere up around $37 million. I don't want to raise my taxes. I don't want to raise anybody's taxes. Don't ask me and a whole lot of other Americans to pay. See, that's the thing. If Warren Buffett, and this is not a pay on to Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett has spent a career as a ruthless businessman. He has done plenty of harm throughout his career. You know, Andrew Carnegie wrapped up his life of barony. You know, he was one of those robber barons of the late 19th century. Building libraries, trying to do something good with all the money that he had upwardly transferred from the very poorest into his own pockets. Well, I don't think we have to worry about John Campbell doing that. And he says, well, if Warren Buffett wants to pay more money, that's fine. You just let him go ahead. But the point is, even Warren Buffett can't solve this problem. But if we apply firm and progressive taxation rates, because it is called a progressive income tax after all, or at least that's the way it started, those with more paid more, those with less pay less. It is certainly not the case now, especially with the imposition of sales taxes and gasoline taxes and liquor taxes and tobacco taxes and the so-called sin taxes and fees and right. All those things, sales taxes on groceries, goods, whatever, all of those things hit people who make less harder than they hit people who make more because they represent a greater aggregate portion of income to people who make less. It's simple. But if Warren Buffett said, okay, screw it. You know what? I'm filthy rich. From here on out, I'm giving everything to the IRS. It wouldn't solve the problem. The only way we solve the problem is all of us working together. And down here, amongst us plebs, us proles, we're already doing plenty of the working. In fact, according to people like Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum, Bro Fromix, we're not working hard enough or long enough. Retiring at 67 is way too young for us, says Rick Santorum, if you recall last week's programs. I guess you could say that at least John Campbell was what passes for his class honest. I don't ask me and a whole lot of Americans to pay too. They want all the benefits conferred by being an American, but they do not want for one instant to pay for the privilege. I wonder how he'd like to be the richest man in Somalia or the richest man in Haiti, where he couldn't set foot outside his door without a small army of armed gun thugs to protect his hide from the guy who was next down the rung on the ladder and wanting his lifestyle. Sounds like that's what he wants, isn't it? Doesn't it? But as that book that the Christians are so fond of says, he would be among the first to cry, Lord, Lord. Because he likes that police protection. And he likes that fire protection. As long as it's protecting him. Reverbo with a note. Virtuous? What a put down. Virtue, says Reverbo, is defined thusly. 1. Behavior showing high moral standards. The last definition is interesting. 2. Virtues in traditional Christian angelology, the 7th highest order of the 9-fold celestial hierarchy. The rest of us hard-working American folks, some of whom must have pulled the lever for this lizard, might as well reserve a spot below deck right now, huh? At the end of the day, this schmuck earns a living, cashes his paycheck, just like the rest of us, and what he flushes down the toilet stinks just like ours. Only difference is, he ain't paying his fair share. I didn't realize it was so hard living on per year what I'll be lucky to have for the rest of my life. Reverbo closes saying, it reminds me all too often of your Vonnegut tag at the end of your emails, Bob. A normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous, industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all. David in Tennessee. I lived this ugly math. Look, Bob, I saw it said once by a guy that had fired 50 men and women to find 60 that would take his abuse. I've given over 100 people a job, and these people are sending unions after me? They live in a bubble. They live in a bubble of their own imagined persecution. Now, it's not quite the same thing, but let me offer you an excerpt. Don't go turning away. This is not what this is all about. Stand by. Got an email from Ron over the weekend with a link to a Denver Post article. I emailed it on to Sandra because I knew she'd get it'd make her scream a little bit. It's a Denver Post article about the Tebow thing out that way. You know, there's a little uprising of people wanting third string, can't play quarterback to save his immortal soul, little Timmy Jebo to step in and say, you know, I don't know, put the healing hands of faith behind on the behind of the Denver Broncos center and somehow make it all better and get them to the Super Bowl. Ron writing, he said, I don't know whether you've read the linked article or not. I want to know, is there no place in today's America that we can escape religion industry shills pushing their favorite son or some other crap we can do without? About halfway through the article, the line that caused me to do a facepalm and then give out a primal scream, that line being, it's because he's a Christian that most sports writers won't give him a chance, him being little Timmy Jebo, won't give him a chance. These people are the eternal victims. All sports writers are godless commies that are holding little Timmy Jebo back from his just desserts. I'm not a vindictive man, yet I want Julius Pepper to hit Timmy so hard that he'll see Jesus. Whether it's sports or politics or any other area of our lives, we are inundated with overt in-your-face religiosity, and I, for one, am tired of it. And my point is, it extends beyond that. We're talking about the bubble that, and I guess it's, you know, I don't know, maybe horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner could help out with this a little bit, but there's this sort of, I don't know, spiritually calcified little bubble that exists around these privileged babies that makes them think that, they're persecuted. Little Timmy Jebo is being persecuted for his Lord's name's sake, and that's why he's polishing the pine in third string. Doesn't have anything to do with the fact that he's got a goofy-ass throwing motion that would more likely wind up in the hands of the, you know, opposition D-backs than in his own receiver. No, it's because he's being persecuted for being a Christian. And by the same token, these freaks, these multimillionaire freaks in Congress, well, I don't want you to raise my taxes. I want to keep all my money. But I still want the police, and I still want the fire department, and I still want I want all the roads nice and smooth. I don't want anything bouncing underneath my giant Hummer penis extension. Babies. They are babies. Michael, writing in from Sebastopol, says, that $260 a week, that $265 a week at the subway, doesn't include overhead, food, equipment, rent, and so forth. This POS is full of crap. News Ninja Susan noting, these people are sounding just like a couple of rather famous people, Nicholas II and Louis XVI. Wonder if history will treat these guys the same way. The question is, will we treat these guys the same way? Susan continues, in the case of some millionaires, it just requires a filthy rich father. Yeah. Indeed. I don't want to pay for being American. I just want it to be my God-given right to... I mean, my God! Has John Campbell never even looked outside the United States? And not looked very far? This is, after all, a nation that has, what, 4% of the world's population and consumes 25% of its resources? Yeah. There are places on earth that being rich will not save you. And yet we're the ones who are in danger. I mentioned the Agence Provocateur. Probably mispronouncing that somehow or another. But I mentioned that in my conversation with Dr. Flowers because of, well... something that Lottie, our chat room moderator, sent along. Headline, Breitbart fantasizes about killing liberals. We outnumber them, and we have the guns.
Bring them on. Sorry. I must say that in my non-strategic... Because I'm under attack all the time. If you see it on Twitter, the tolerance call me gay. I mean, it's just like they're vicious, the death threats and everything. And so there are times where I'm not thinking as clearly as I should. And in those unclear moments, I always think to myself, fire the first shot. Bring it on. Because I know who's on our side. and they know that they can only win a rhetorical and a propaganda war. They cannot win. We outnumber them in this country, and we have the guns. So they, I'm not kidding. They talk a mean game, but they will not cross that line because they know what they're dealing with. And I have people who come up to me in the military, major named people in the military, who grab me and they go, thank you for what you're doing. We've got your back. And so...
Ho, ho, ho. How about that? Ain't that funny? Ain't that funny, Andrew Breitbart saying that the American military's got a subversive element inside of it that's willing to come in and kill American citizens on his sorry ass's behalf? Ho, ho, ho! Ain't that funny? I don't care who you are, that's funny.
So they understand that. These are the unspoken things we know. They know. They know who's on their side. They've got Janine Garofalo. We are freaked out by that. When push comes to shove, they know who's on our side. They are the bullies on the playground, and they're starting to realize, what if we were to fight back? What if we were to slap back? You know, these union thugs, these public sector union thugs, I'm just waiting. Bring it on. I am sick of it. I'm sick of this Trumka guy. I'm sick of this John Sweeney. I'm sick of the SEIU. I'm sick of
John Sweeney? John Sweeney hasn't been in the public eye for years. I mean, that's who Trumka replaced. And he wasn't exactly screaming to the barricades before he left. I'm sick of him. Jesus Christ.
And going to people's homes, executives' homes, and showing up, and the media not thinking, you don't think there's a problem with that? Katie Couric, what if we went to Katie Couric's house? What if the Tea Party showed up at Katie Couric's house and scared the living crap out of her teenage kids? And that's what they do because they know that the mainstream media won't cover it. And so, there's just a part of me that wants them to walk over that line.
I've told you before, I'll tell you again, they ache, the right wing does, for bloodshed. They yearn for it. They fantasize about it as they masturbate. Killing, and death, murder, and mayhem. Because in the right-wing mind, it's the same thing as sexual release. That's how twisted they are. That's why I constantly and continually remind myself as well as you that we will go nowhere with violence, because it's the one thing that they know how to do. When was the last time you saw a teabagger sit down in silent civil disobedience and get arrested and hauled away? How about never? They don't do that. They love the money too much. They don't want to pay the fine. They're a bunch of damn deadbeats. Oh, they wave their guns because they're hoping somebody will wave one back. And then for them, the fun starts. But they yearn for it. And I know it's hard. I know it. I'm not. It's hard for me. It's probably as or more difficult for you to comprehend the mind of someone who sits around going, "Damn, I wish I could just kill me some people." But they're.